24. What do you guys picture when you hear the word desert? Philip asked.
Sand dunes, Tyler said. A sea of stark, clean, undulating sand dunes, receding endlessly into the horizon under a clear blue sky.
They walked for a moment, then Philip asked,
You're thinking about the movie Dune now, aren't you, Tyler?
Yes, yes I am.
Jimmy said,
I picture salt flats, like Bonneville. Just a flat, lifeless plain. No landmarks, no features, nothing but salt and sand and heat.
Gary said,
I picture an island with some ferns and a single palm tree. And before you say anything, yes, I know that's not right. That's pretty much the opposite of a desert. But when I was a kid, they always called that a desert island, and it just stuck with me, okay?
Jimmy said,
That's fine, Gary. Everybody has that kind of stuff. When you think of a punk rocker, you probably picture a leather jacket and a mohawk. But two of the biggest punk bands were the Talking Heads and Blondie.
My point is, Philip said, when you hear the word desert, nobody pictures this.
No, Tyler agreed. It might qualify as a desert, but they should probably call it a wasteland.
The path down the foothills and out of the woods had been wide and mostly downhill before terminating in the desert they'd been told was called the Scapa. And as Philip had said, the Scapa was not what they were expecting. They expected to find sand, but they found dirt. Gritty, dark red dirt. They expected a near total lack of life, maybe punctuated with the occasional cactus. But they found plentiful tumbleweeds and occasional glimpses of tiny, fast-moving rodents. They expected to find no water, but it clearly had rained at some point in the recent past. They would occasionally pass a patch of damp ground or a puddle of liquid that, if you were being a stickler, you would have to admit was water. But only someone who wanted to die or was desperate to live would dare drink it. In short, where most deserts were hostile to life, the Scapa was merely passive-aggressive. Where the Sahara seemed to scream at people to stay away, the Scapa told them,
You want to live here? Go ahead. Fine by me. I've given you everything you need. Plants, animals, water. Flourish, why don't you?
Rather than being perfectly flat or covered with treacherous but beautiful dunes, the landscape was made up of rolling hills that were just steep enough to be irritating to walk up and treacherous to walk down and just flat enough to be boring. The wizards had to put in effort and watch their step, but only because they were hand-carrying an object that had been designed solely for the purpose of cutting their hands. One advantage of the gently rolling landscape and the scratchy, skeletal nature of the sagebrush was that they could see the sand wolves coming a mile away. Or at least they would have if the sand wolf simulation subroutine had been more realistic. As it was, they could see the sand wolves render out of thin air from yards away. When a sand wolf appeared, whoever was carrying the twisted portion of the Mobius blade would let go and dispatch the wolf. Much like they had with the sledge, they took turns fending off wolves and settled into a nice routine, which experience had taught them is exactly when things go wrong. Philip was on wolf duty, pinching the twisted portion of the Mobius blade off to his side with his hand while walking forward. The others concentrated on their footing and on not getting their hands cut off. As Philip watched the landscape ahead for attackers and obstacles, he saw something that he did not yet know would eventually qualify as both. They had not been in the Scapa all that long, but their slowed pace and the monotony of the landscape made it feel much longer. As they crested a low hill, just like the hundreds before, Philip saw in the distance, directly in their path, a mound of some sort that stood out from the others. In a landscape of gentle hills and equally gentle valleys, like a vast, two-dimensional sine wave, this one small bump seemed to erupt from the ground. It was one hill made of dirt in a sea of hills made of dirt, and yet it looked out of place. Philip told the others to stop for a moment. The others asked why. Philip explained,
There's a hill.
Philip didn't blame them for not being impressed with his answer. He explained further.
It's weird.
Again, Philip couldn't blame them for not being impressed. The others did stop, and he pointed out the offending pile of soil, and they finally agreed that it looked wrong. They all kept an eye on it as they walked. Thus, in a barren landscape with only one thing that made them nervous, the wizards walked directly toward that one thing. They were about 50 feet from the offending lump, and Philip was contemplating which side they should pass it on when the pile of dirt made the question moot by standing up. At first, Philip was the only one who saw the hill moving, as the others were preoccupied with carrying the Mubius blade. When the hill moved, Philip got startled and yelled and jumped a bit, which startled the others, making them jump quite a bit and yell at Philip. Then they saw what had startled Philip, and they all yelled at that. The mound had stirred, then lifted off the ground, supported by two short, thick columns of soil. Its central mass was a thick, bulbous lump of dirt and gravel that sprouted two gnarled arms and a flattened lump that approximated a head. Scrubgrass, sagebrush, and formerly buried roots sprouted from the thing's surface like body hair. It stood 8 feet tall, much taller than any of the wizards, yet managed to seem short and stubby. The creature's eyes were defined by their absence. Two dark pits marked the place on the head where eyes would normally be. As it looked down at the wizards, they were given the contradictory impressions that they were being watched and that nobody was home. As the creature started to move, wispy clouds of dust rose from its joints, trailing behind it like a vapor trail as it lumbered toward the wizards. The beast started slow but was clearly picking up speed, and there were only about 50 feet between it and the wizards, who set a world speed record for carefully putting something down. The instant the Mubius blade was resting on the ground, they scattered. The creature pursued the nearest wizard, which in this case was Philip, who did the natural thing and kept running. When the others realized this, they stopped running and watched.
Seriously? A dirt monster?
Gary said, catching his breath. Tyler replied,
I'm guessing that's the elemental we were warned about. Earth is an element.
Philip's luxurious, full fur vest bounced with each step and flapped behind him as he fled from the elemental. The creature was hunched over, swinging its arms from side to side as it ran, leading with its flattened head and dead eyes. It had attained its top speed, which was surprisingly slow, but still slightly faster than Philip's top speed.
Run! Jimmy shouted. It's gaining on you!
Philip ventured a panicky glance over his shoulder at the thing chasing him.
Don't look at it!
Jimmy shouted.
Run!
Philip would have glared at Jimmy, but instead he tripped on some sagebrush and slid to a halt on his face. He scrambled back up to his feet just in time to have the elemental headbutt him with tremendous force between the shoulder blades, sending him flying and causing him to again slide to a stop on his face. The elemental had come to a dead stop, having imparted all of its momentum to Philip. It restarted its pursuit before Philip had even touched the ground. But the beast was not a sprinter, and Philip had enough time to roll to his right, operating mostly on instinct. After pushing off the ground, he brought up his arms to protect his head. His right upper arm collided with the elemental's wrist as the creature, unable to turn its bulk at speed, trundled past. Philip felt the impact and was sure it had done serious damage, but felt no pain. The elemental, being made of dirt, was not so fortunate. Its fist broke cleanly from its arm. When it hit the ground, the severed fist exploded into a cloud of dust and a pile of loose gravel and dirt. The elemental jogged to a halt and looked at the crumbling stump where its hand had been. It waddled to the spot where its hand had landed and disintegrated. The cloud of dust created when the severed hand impacted the ground had not dissipated, as one would expect, but had remained in place and now seemed to actually become thicker and more tangible. Philip saw that individual grains of soil were lifting off the ground, as if supported by a strong wind that blew up out of the earth itself. By the time the elemental had reached the point of impact, all of the debris was airborne. It wafted toward the creature's shattered forearm and reformed into a fist as the beast watched with its dull, expressionless face. The elemental rotated its wrist and seemed satisfied. Clearly, it had no need of articulated fingers. Confirming that it was again fully functional, it turned its attention back to Philip, taking the first slow steps that would soon become a full gallop. Philip crawled backward, away from the creature, and felt a sudden jolt of blinding pain from his upper arm. He had not realized it was even injured before, but now he was sure it was broken. He rolled on his side, cradling his arm, which actually made it hurt worse. Looking down, past his broken arm and his flailing, kicking legs, Philip could see the dirt elemental coming his way, picking up speed. He knew that even if he did manage to regain his feet, he'd do it just in time to get knocked down again. His conscious mind didn't have enough time to come up with a plan. His animal instincts told him to roll into a ball and hope it would be over quickly. Philip decided to call that Plan B, and was starting to struggle to his feet when a Gary-shaped blur streaked into view, sword drawn, and hacked off one of the creature's arms. The dirt elemental skidded to a halt, showering the still-prone Philip with dust and gravel. Slowly, it turned its back on Philip, then walked over to the ruined remains of its severed arm. The few bits still recognizable as a former limb disintegrated into rubble, then drifted into the air. It reformed and consolidated back into a functional arm. The dirt elemental glanced at Philip, who was still trying to stand without jostling his arm. It looked as if it might just finish Philip off, but it was distracted by Gary, who was jumping up and down and shouting insults in an attempt to get the creature's attention. It worked. The creature looked at Gary, then started moving his way. Gary, naturally, fled. Gary ran in a wide curve, looping around toward Tyler and Jimmy. The creature followed. The creature was slightly faster than Gary in a straight line, but because of its much larger mass, it had a hard time managing turns, which slowed it down just enough for Gary to maintain his lead. When they saw that Gary was leading the creature back toward them, Tyler and Jimmy each ran in opposite directions, causing Gary, then the creature, to run between them, harmlessly.
"What are you doing?"
Tyler asked as Gary ran past.
"I'm bringing it over here so you can get it off of me!"
Gary shouted.
"That's no good!"
Tyler yelled to the now distant Gary, who was still leading the creature in a wide arc.
"Why not?"
"Because then it'd be chasing me!"
Tyler replied. Jimmy added,
"Yeah, then I'd have to get it off him, and you'd have to get it off me. It's not a long-term solution!"
Gary's cursing sounded distant and weak to Jimmy and Tyler. Philip had made it to his feet by this time and was slowly walking toward them. He looked pale and shaken. Tyler told him to stay on his feet just in case, but to keep his distance until they figured out what to do with the dirt monster. Jimmy watched a moment, then said, in a distracted voice,
"It's just chasing him. It's not trying to cut him off or throw anything at him. It's just chasing."
Tyler nodded.
"You're surprised it's not very bright? It was made by Todd. How smart can it be?"
Jimmy drew his sword and glanced at Tyler, who glanced back and drew his own sword. Jimmy nodded, then called out to Gary.
"Okay, we're ready this time. Lead him back here and run between us."
Gary didn't say anything, but he immediately changed course, turning sharply toward Tyler and Jimmy. The elemental was not able to turn as sharply and swung wide behind Gary, like a water skier slewing out behind the towboat. Gary made a beeline for Tyler and Jimmy. The creature continued making a beeline for Gary. Tyler and Jimmy stood motionless as Gary ran between them. As expected, the beast paid them no attention, continuing to home in on Gary. As it went past, Jimmy and Tyler both swung their swords. If they had been more coordinated as a team, they might have discussed whether they should swing for different parts of the creature's anatomy. But they weren't, so they both swung for the legs, neatly severing them from the elemental's torso. The legs fell and tumbled and shattered as they hit the ground. The torso, arms, and head continued to move forward, carried by their own momentum. The creature swung its arms wildly, as if trying to regain its balance, but it had no legs to balance on. What served as the dirt elemental's pelvis hit the ground first and crumbled into nothing as the mass of the creature's torso rolled forward. After a bit more flailing and rolling, all that was left was a mess and a cloud of dust, which really is all there ever was to begin with. Tyler and Jimmy stood, looking down at their handiwork. Gary jogged up to join them.
"Good work, guys," Gary said. "Your plan worked.
Plan? Tyler asked. That wasn't a plan. That was improvising. The plan was to knock you down and see if the elemental would trip over you. But I lost my nerve.
They shared a chuckle, but it was short-lived. Nobody had to point out that the dust cloud was not dissipating. Soon, it was again coalescing into the familiar form of the dirt elemental, lying face down on the ground. Tyler looked to Philip, who was still a good distance away. Tyler held up a hand, telling Philip to keep his distance. Philip did not need to be told this. The elemental slowly lifted itself to its feet. It did not speak, but its body language said that it was not happy. Jimmy, Tyler, and Gary took off running in three different directions, forcing the creature to decide which of them to chase. It chose Jimmy. Jimmy looked back over his shoulder and yelled, "See, Gary, a short-term solution!" Tyler sprinted to the top of the nearest mound, hoping he could see something, anything that might be of use. If not, they'd let the elemental chase Jimmy for a minute or so, chop it to bits, and start the whole process over again. Tyler shielded his eyes with his hand and muttered,
"Thought I saw as we walked here."
Tyler saw what he was looking for and yelled,
"Jimmy! Jimmy!"
When he was sure Jimmy was looking his way, he pointed back the way they'd come from and yelled,
"Puddle!"
Jimmy ran the direction Tyler had indicated, as did Tyler and Gary. They didn't know what would happen, but they wanted to see it. Tyler tried to guide Jimmy toward the puddle, yelling,
"Left! More to your left! No, not that far, right!"
Jimmy missed the puddle, but got close enough to get a good look. It was large for a puddle, but far too small to be a pond. It was a 10-foot-wide, amorphous blob of filthy-looking water that had either burbled up from the sickly ground or had fallen in the last rain and refused to penetrate any farther into this awful piece of land. It was surrounded by a 3-foot moat of gummy-looking mud. Jimmy was glad he'd missed it, because he was half sure that if he'd set 1 foot in the actual moistened area of the puddle, he'd have come to an instant stop and been helpless to escape from the dirt elemental. When Jimmy was beyond the puddle, he made a quick 45-degree turn in the direction of the puddle. He thought that if he was lucky, the elemental would try to cut the corner and get stuck in the mud. He didn't dare slow down to look, but he didn't have to. Tyler and Gary's disappointed groans told him he had not been successful. He cursed himself, remembering that the stupid creature cornered like a tank. Expecting it to suddenly cut a corner more sharply than he had was a silly mistake. Jimmy ran as fast as he could in a straight line for a bit, then turned widely and lined up on a direct path for the puddle. He deliberately slowed, allowing the creature to close the gap. Jimmy ran as near as he dared to the mud bordering the puddle, then dodged to the left. He heard a splash, and Tyler and Gary cheering, and saw a lump of mud about the size of a watermelon fly past him to his right and splatter on the ground. As Jimmy slid to a stop, a second lump fell to the ground from a much higher, slower trajectory. Jimmy turned, hoping to see the monster stuck in the mud, and was disappointed. The elemental had made it to the other side of the puddle and was down on its hands and knees, as if it had simply tripped on its way through the puddle, and now would get up, angrier than before. Jimmy couldn't figure out why Tyler and Gary sounded so happy. Even Philip seemed to be yelling congratulations while sitting on the ground, cradling his injured arm. It was only when the elemental tried to get to its feet again and failed that Jimmy realized why everyone was so delighted. The beast would not be able to get back on his feet because the two large blobs of mud that had gone flying were its feet. Clearly, they had quickly soaked up water on contact. Then had become heavy enough to go flying when the beast kicked its feet forward to take a step. Jimmy's eyes darted to the nearest foot, now just a blob of dark, wet mud on the ground. Jimmy expected to see it crumbling apart and drifting toward the dirt elemental, ready to resume its duties as a foot. Instead, he saw the blob of mud stirring slightly and spreading out as it settled.
"It can't reform!" he yelled to the others. "The mud is too heavy! Lead it back into the puddle!"
The elemental was crawling toward Jimmy. Tyler sprinted toward it and used his sword to hack off one of the creature's arms, causing it to do an undignified faceplant. Of course, the creature's arm was bone dry and took little time to reattach itself to the beast's torso, but the object was to get the creature's attention. Tyler had accomplished that handily. The elemental turned away from Jimmy and crawled away in pursuit of Tyler, who had run around to the far side of the puddle. Later, when they discussed the day's events, they would theorize that the dry earth that made up the elemental's body was very loosely packed, and thus the normal capillary action that drew the moisture up into the mass of dirt was accelerated. Whatever the cause, when the creature's right hand went into the puddle, the dirt that constituted its arm immediately darkened all the way past its elbow. The left hand followed the right hand into the water, then the right was lifted to reach forward and continue crawling toward Tyler. As the right arm pitched forward, the sodden blob that had been the creature's hand flew straight up in the air and landed next to the creature, making a large, muddy splash. The creature pondered the soggy stump where its right hand had been. Then its left hand, still submerged in the foot-deep puddle, disintegrated. Since one-third of the creature's weight was resting on a hand that now no longer existed, the dirt elemental fell face-first into the water. All of the still exposed parts of the dirt elemental darkened and softened. It rolled onto its back, revealing the damage the moisture had done. It thrashed with its mangled limbs, flinging bits of itself all over the countryside as it struggled to get free. Eventually, it stopped trying to get out of the puddle because it had become the puddle. What had been a still body of fetid liquid was now a viscous slick of dark, gummy mud. The force that allowed the creature to reform when dry was strong enough to keep the mud bubbling and churning, but did not seem strong enough to let it rise and be a threat again. Gary crouched next to the edge of the mud patch, stuck the end of his sword in the mud, and said, "Whatever particulate matter simulation he was using to make it clearly wasn't calibrated for the weight of the mud. Just loose, dry dirt. I don't think it's going to give us any more trouble." A tendril of mud started to climb Gary's sword, making its way toward his hand with surprising speed. Gary shrieked and jerked the sword out of the mud, flinging bits of muck far away. The beast was dispersed and subdued, but it wasn't dead. It was only a matter of time before it reformed. After he'd composed himself, Gary said, "All the same, I think we should keep moving." Before they could move on, there was the issue of Philip's arm. There was no doubt in anyone's mind that it was broken. The question was, how badly? They looked at the affected region. They poked at it and listened to the volume and ferocity of Philip's complaints. Then, falling back on all of their combined experience in the medical profession, none. They determined that it was a clean break in one place. They hoped. They asked Philip if it hurt. He said, "Yes!" which did not surprise them. Philip asked if there was anything they could do for the pain. They said, "No," which did not surprise him. In the end, they cut some excess fur from the hem of Philip's increasingly ratty mink coat and made him the world's most glamorous sling. Normally, this would have been difficult since every genuine fur coat is also a leather coat, and leather isn't famous for being easy to cut. Luckily, they had the Mobius blade, which sliced through the leather as if it were tissue paper.
"Glad the Mobius blade is so sharp," Tyler said, quickly following with, "Man, there's a sentence I didn't expect to say."
Jimmy said, "I don't think it's possible for a blade to be this sharp on its own. I'm betting he used the file to alter the edge. Maybe the molecules along the edge instantly sever certain bonds and any other molecules they touch. Todd has played around with that kind of thing before."
"Really? When?" Tyler asked.
"Before he came to us. I found out all about it while I was working my way back. He killed a man by negating all of the molecular bonds in his body, reduced him to a puddle of goo. The mess was horrendous. That's how I think the blade works. Even if I'm wrong, it's a pretty good idea. We should remember it for when we get out of this."
From thin air, somewhere above them, Todd's voice called out,
"Good guess, Merlin. Sorry, you go by Jimmy these days. Anyway, right on the nose. Glad you approve. It took a lot of tweaking to get it right. At first, it affected any molecules it touched, so the blade kept tearing itself apart. I made the effect directional. It only cuts things that hit it head-on, which fixed the cutting itself to bits problem, but then I found that if I dropped the prototype just right, it would cut all the way to the center of the Earth.
How'd you learn that?
I dropped it just right and it cut all the way to the center of the Earth. At least, I assume so. The hole closed itself back up. Anyway, I see what you mean. It might be useful for you.
Todd laughed.
When you get out of this, especially Philip. He looks great.
Philip told Todd what he thought of his opinion, but Todd had either left or decided not to answer. They fitted Philip's new fur sling. Then Jimmy helped Philip to his feet, saying,
All right, Philip, upsy-daisy. We'll handle carrying the blade. You just take the lead and keep an eye out for wolves.
Philip asked Tyler and Gary if they agreed. They did, vigorously. He shrugged, winced in pain, then watched while the others lifted the Mobius blade. When they had the blade in hand, Philip resumed the path to the chasm of certain doom. The others followed. Tyler and Jimmy exchanged an uncertain look.
Hey, Gary said. What was that?
Tyler said,
What?
What was that look? Gary asked.
Nothing,
Tyler said.
There was no look. Shut up.
Without turning or even slowing down, Philip said,
Don't worry about it, Gary. It just meant that Jimmy and Tyler aren't sure how long I'm going to last with a broken arm.
Oh, Gary said. Okay.